Cashing in on content marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal. And every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about ways to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring the power of niche content. Joining me is SEO specialist Tessa Ihara, who founded the SEO Mama Agency and has a ton of experience flipping niche sites. Welcome to the show, Tessa.
Hi, Amanda. Hi, everyone. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. I think you have the perfect experience to talk about this topic, which we've touched on this show in some episodes, but haven't dedicated a lot of time to, and I think it's really important. So because of your background in flipping niche sites and working on niche content, when did you first realize how effective niche content could be?
Okay, so let me just kind of like give you a bit of history. Yeah. I started doing SEO in 2009, and really, I just dive right in creating niche sites. And right there and then, because I have some friends and I'm reading blogs, I see early on in my Make Money Online journey, SEO journey, that really niche site, building niche site is so powerful. So right there and then I knew it. And back in the days, it was like ranking blog spots, Squidio lenses, if your audience or if you know about Hub Pages. So yeah, as early as 2009, I knew that they're effective.
And you've seen that carry on till today, right? Because so much has changed over the years.
Yes, it did. I mean, how SEO changed, it changes how you rank sites and how you do niche sites nowadays. Before, I mean, you'd not believe the quality of sites that I've created before. You don't want to see
ranks, right?
Yes.
So what have been some of the major changes, do you think, over time, aside from just like the general, algorithm changes?
Sorry. Definitely the quality of content and the branding side of it. Back in the days, you just kind of like use a free platform like Blogspot and WordPress, and then you slap content in it, even copy duplicate content, just like using. I remember there are a lot of people that would use spinning content machine. It's like an AI thing, and it's back. I mean, so the quality definitely it has changed. You're not going to be able to rank crap content anymore. Sometimes people still do that, but you seldom see crappy content that ranks. And now it's all about branding and putting your face on your blog and being like really the authority. And because we have the ETH right now, right? The ETH factor is definitely has
expertise,
changed.
Expertise, authority, and trustworthiness.
Yeah, it definitely changed the game and how we site builders do and build websites.
So let's talk about that, because when you have a bigger audience, it might be a little easier to figure them out through like keyword research and such. Like, how do you go about researching really niche audiences online? Like, how do you find out what their problems are, what their questions are, etc.?
Interestingly, I didn't have that thought. Actually, I was like, huh, yeah, this is an issue, but I didn't really think that, oh, it's too small that I'm not gonna be able to research. In fact, every time I approach a niche, I always have that problem of, you know, niching down, because there's a lot of things that I could see how to approach it. So I said, no, I really need to dig deeper. I really need to drill more. So I didn't have that problem, although I could kind of like understand where you're coming from, because most of the keywords that I target, by the way, because they really, really niche down. To be honest, I don't look at the search volume, because one, I knew it's really, really skewed and it's not accurate. So I don't look at that. And I've targeted keywords as low as 10, sometimes zero, as long as the keyword makes sense and is really, really relevant. And because I tend to target transactional keywords or like buying keywords, I don't care about the search volume. So Sometimes I would, well, I mean, every time you approach a new niche, you gotta find ways how to find them, how to know the pain points and know the questions of the audience that you have. Normally I would just use Google. It's a cliche, but I would use Google and the auto suggest feature. And after that, I would go to big box stores and see what products are related to this niche. For example, if it's about beauty and I'm targeting a specific niche, say cheap products or cheap drugstore beauty products, if I'm targeting that, I'm going to go to Amazon and see what products are famous in this niche. Say what products are famous, what drugstore products are famous, and then I'm going to go and check those products and see the reviews. And there is a part in Amazon where there are questions, the customers can ask questions to the manufacturers, right? I gather those questions because really those are questions of the of real customers. And when I read reviews, there are comments there that you could kind of like, they're telling you, hints, they're telling you what the niche is all about, what do they want to hear, what they're looking for the specific product. And also, I also use forums.
Yeah.
So you could use a lot of search operators in Google, so you could find forums, related forums, blogs, and also Quora. Yeah. And one thing, there's a site, what's that, Ask? I forgot the site where you could just ask a lot of, you could just see questions being asked in the niche.
Oh, is it Answer the Public?
Yeah, Answer the Public is one more. Ask, I forgot. There's one that people also ask, right, on Google's page one. So I gather all of those questions, including the Answer the Public. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I love some of these ways that you've gathered real questions from folks that you're targeting.
Yep.
So volume doesn't matter as much to you because you're targeting more transactional keywords, right?
Yes.
Is there ever a time where you're targeting, you know, mid or top of the funnel? Does that make sense to do with more niche sites?
Yes, yes. Because right back in the days, a lot of people would just really, really target buying keywords where they would only have, we call it money posts, by the way, when you just produce content that that generate money, or the aim goal is to generate sales and affiliate money. So right now, because it came in, everybody needs to produce this site that is an authority, or kind of like if a Google manual rater comes in, they know that, oh, this site is useful. Oh, this site is created to help people. So we really need to really produce top funnel content and middle funnel content. So like how-tos, guides. So it's always mandatory for me, once I attack a niche, I always have the how-to. So if it and guides, so if it's a kitchen niche, then I have the product reviews, the buying guides, or essentials, I call it. And then you have how-tos or cooking guides, for example, if it's a kitchen niche. And then you have recipes. So I always make sure that there is the brand side of the content. So I also have the top of the funnel and the middle of the funnel. So partly it's just like I always ask myself, if I'm going to visit a kitchen site, or if I'm going to visit a clothing site, what do I want to see? What guides I want to read? And I'll just use Google, and then I see what the competitor is doing, what content are they doing. And my favorite tool is actually Ahrefs. Mostly I do all of my research over there.
It's so great. Yeah. So I love the way you explain that, because it's important to see the different objectives, right? Like people try to measure them similarly, but like you're saying, that top of the funnel content is about building trust, which is harder to figure out if it's necessarily quote unquote working. You just kind of know that it is. So let's talk about, like, how do you know when you create a piece of content, whether it is that top of the funnel, but also just the more transactional, if it is successful? What are some of the things that you're doing to measure the results of what you've created, and how do you know when you want to tweak something?
Okay. So definitely the process starts, I mean, my confidence comes in from a good keyword research. So there's always a basis or like a foundation. Mm-hmm. So once you do keyword research and you do keyword clustering, you group your keywords. So right there and then you feel that, oh my God, this topic cluster is huge. I really think this would take off. So once you put it out there, well, the key measures or the KPIs are like the traffic and then the income. So if it's money post, definitely the traffic and the sales that it drives, that those are just my measurement. Mm-hmm. Back in the days when I'm just starting doing niche sites, because I really, really want to measure the KPR or the ROI of a post that I publish, I had a lot of tagging per page. So for example, I think I had 16 or 20 money posts. I had 20 tags to track, 20 Amazon tags, Amazon affiliate tags to track each page income. And also the tracking, you could, in Ahrefs, you could track your top pages every month. So then you could measure the ROI versus the amount of, because I also record how many words I do it and how much do I spend each content. So I pretty much know, for example, in the past 2 months, I already earned X amount from this content. So I pretty much kind of like even out all the expenses. And yep, and now I'm earning from that. That
I love that you're tracking time investment. Like, real tracking. You know, that I don't think a lot of people, especially when they work at a, you know, a big company, that they're sitting there and saying, this is how much time I put into this, you know, and this is the payout that I got. That's really cool that you do that.
We do, because when we sell, we brokers would check your P&L. So you gotta have that profit and loss, and then so it's hard if you just collect your numbers once you're selling it. So we really try to, the moment we start a niche site, we have the site binder. I call it a site binder. So it's spreadsheet, by the way, that I have expenses, I have income, and I have the number of words. So all of the content out that goes out in the blog, in the back end, we have a record for everything. We have the number of words, who write it, how much we paid for it, those kind of stats.
Yeah. So you mentioned that, and makes total sense, that traffic and then just actual sales are how you measure the bottom of the funnel content. What do you do when you're getting the traffic, but you're not getting the sales? What is the first thing you do to kind of optimize to change that?
Right. I have a problem with that. Same. That's my issue right now in my kitchen side. One thing I check is, do I have a lot of call to actions? Because mostly you got traffic and then you realize people are not clicking because one, you don't have those call to action buttons. So and also one thing, my issue is my writers tend to really ramble a lot and above the fold. And I don't used to before. I didn't put any call to action above default because I think it's not. I mean, it's too sleazy. So, and to be honest, a lot of people that are going to your website finding your site because of those buying keywords, they don't want to read. They just want, I want to find this product for this niche. Give it to me. So if you have that call to action above the fold, you're helping them. So they leave once they see the link, they click it out. So first thing I check is, do I have enough call to action buttons and whatnot? Then first is, sometimes there's traffic. Now my problem is there is traffic, but they're not staying. So meaning you're ranking, people click because you have a good meta description, but the moment they land on the page, they leave. So it's either the content or the hook is not that good. So we're tweaking that. We tweak the hook. We tweak the call to action. We make sure the layout is easy on the eyes. We don't, all of the paragraphs that we have right now is like 2 to 3 sentences, and 3 sentences are max that we have in a paragraph. And it used to be like 4 to 5. I didn't care before. So now those are the things that we see works in the back end. So changing the layout, CTA, hook, and just really honing down on the flow of the content. And because these are bottom of the funnel. So for example, buying product names, you just don't put product names in there. You tell the client or the visitors, this product is, for example, Vitamix 5200, best for busy moms. So right there, if I'm a busy mom, I'm going to check this product because this is for busy mom. So product X, best for X people, those kind of thing. I always put that in my product names, and I've seen conversion doing that. So those are the top things that we tweak. And of course, pictures. We put pictures, really, really engaging pictures. It has helped my kitchen site before. People would really, really leave the site the moment they visit the site, they would just leave. So it now it's improving because we're changing the hook. We're doing pictures. We have changed the layout, and there are plugins, to be honest, that you could install. So you check the behavior of your visitors once it lands on your site, like Heatmap and whatnot. But I haven't used those because I've seen that my tweaks, like putting the ones that I've mentioned, have worked for me.
Yeah. You mentioned meta descriptions too. What are your techniques for making an engaging meta description?
It's like, you know what? Backlink or Brian Dean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Has a good guide about a meta description. Every time a writer would say, how do you write meta description? I would just forward. It's in our SOP, to be honest.
Brandine.
A lot of branding is in my SOP. So I just...
Yeah, we'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, right. So I just tell my writers and my WordPress specialist and my SEO specialist, if you are the reader, if you're looking on for something and you're on page one of SERP, then you have 1 to 10. You choose the site to visit based on that meta description, correct? And of course, you don't want it to give it everything in that meta description. So then the people would not click. Because normally we would just read, right? Oh, it's not what I'm looking for. You're just going to read and then you're going to skip. But if you've read the meta description and you kind of like, there's like a hook, wait a minute, what do they want to say? So it's always just like, I leave it hanging. There's an excitement. You build excitement. It's not, back in the days, we would just like write, this is a review about blah, blah, blah. So right there and then people know what is it all about. But we've changed it, and then we've seen improvement in clicks.
And yeah, I'm putting you on the spot, but do you have an example of what some of those like?
Oh, hang on. For example, if we're talking about a recipe, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, this is the top 10 tips that you need to know how to cook the perfect recipe X, we don't do that. We just say, you're going to be amazed how this recipe X improved when we tweaked this certain hack, kind of like that.
I see. Okay.
So kind of like that. So then they would say, oh, what was the hack? I need to know. Those kind of things.
I
said to them, my writers, every time they would write a meta description, give them something to click, reason to click our content, or choose our content over the others.
Yeah, so it's not strictly descriptive. You're adding a little bit of intrigue.
Yep, kind of like that.
Awesome.
He's like, read along, kind of like that.
Right. I wanted to backtrack a bit because you mentioned keyword clustering. And something I was wondering about was, especially with niche and like trying to get target long tail keywords.
Yeah.
How do you optimize a post to rank for several different keywords? What is your strategy there?
Okay. So really, back in the days, it's just because, SERP has changed and SEO has changed. Before, it's just like if the practice is you gather lots of long tail keywords and you write or you assign a post per long tail keyword. Then before you know it, you have a lot of post about best white socks. Because you target every single keyword about best white socks, right? And it doesn't make sense, because if I want to read information about best white socks, you would rather read it in one post, right? So it makes sense that you write an epic post about the best white socks available out there. So that is how you do keyword clustering or topic clustering. So what I do in the past is I would just gather long tail keywords and group them. And then I would see like, what is the kind of like a dominant topic that is emerging in this group of keywords. So then the next question is, but Tessa, how do I know which is the main keyword in this? Because there's a lot of long tail keywords. So which do I use as the main keyword? Well, the answer is always is on page one. So you go and look for on page one. For example, best white socks for adult people, best white socks for elderly. So Tessa, how do I know which one to use? Then you go to Google and see what are they ranking. Are they ranking same pages for best white socks for adult people and best white socks for elderly people? If you see like an overlap, then use that the dominant overlap. Am I
doing this? Yeah. So if it's when you search both keywords, whatever result is showing up on both.
Yes. Actually, yeah. That's what I do right now. But before, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. But now, because Google is so smart, LSI, right, and so those synonyms, so it's not important anymore that you target the specific keyword. It's important that you are nailing the search intent. So if Google sees that best socks for adult people is just the same as best socks for elderly people, and both sites are ranking, so then I target the keyword that has search volume and which is easier. And that has worked for me.
Awesome. That makes total sense. So you've spent a lot of your career building these sites and flipping them. How have you seen the income potential of that sort of work different from like a more general site?
Right. I'm glad you asked. Well, I've tried building general sites before. It's not as successful as building niche sites. And in fact, the most successful site that I built is really in a small niche. Every time I would share it to friends or people in this field, they are really amazed. It was a 6-figure flip, by the way. I sold it for $143,000.
Wow.
Yeah, right. And before I sold it, I was able to earn around, in that niche alone, that site alone, I was able to earn around 220,000 in the span of 2 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, right. So it was really, really awesome. I was really happy for that site, for that project. It was averaging around 5 to 7K per month. Holidays are really, you know, crazy. Mm-hmm. I had 20K a month out of that niche. And the craziest part is mostly from one page.
Really?
Right? It's so crazy. So, and that's how you measure ROI.
Right.
If you earn 17K out of one page, then that's definitely an ROI. So the income potential is there because, once you kind of like nail down a niche, then you build the it, and then you see, what's that? You build a following, you build a brand out of it. And so I had to sell it, the niche site. I had to sell it because I really didn't know about anything. I mean, I didn't know about that niche. I had to just kind of like, it's getting tiring, and I feel really guilty about the emails that I get, because a lot of emails I'm getting, hey, please help me with very, very detailed questions. And I had to really do my research to reply to this email. So I said, I'm just going to sell it because I'm pretty sure there's someone out there who's going to love this niche. It's in the craft niche, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure there are definitely people who dive into those different topics.
Correct.
So how long does it take you to see that type of result? Like from starting to build the site and the content to being able to sell it?
back in the days, it used to be quick, like less than 1 year. You're able to flip it. Now, because competition and it's taking time to rank, to be honest. The sandbox is longer right now. 18 to 24 months is the decent time period to kind of like being able to flip, to see some a significant amount of money so that you are able to flip it. But that said, if you're on the right track, 2 to 3 months, you're going to see, once you start a blog and then you put up content out there, 2 to 3 months would tell you if you're on the right direction, would tell you some hints that, okay, you need to put up more content on this keyword or improve on this.
What are some of those hints?
Okay, so these are the hints. For example, because I always target long tail keywords. When I say long tail keywords, 4 to 5 words. Because my thinking is, because I'm doing topic clustering, so they're grouped in a sense, although my goal is, I'm pretty sure this content would rank for this keyword X because it's long tail. But then the goal is for this post to rank to all of these long tail keywords and then to the bigger term. So like, for example, I have, let's say, best white socks for elderly people. That's one long tail keyword. And then best white socks for adult people who are like that, blah, blah, blah. For example, like that. But the main, the keyword that you really want to rank are the best white socks, right? Mm-hmm. So that is a bigger term and that has a lot of searches. But eventually you will get there. But you would know if you're able to do that, if in the first 3 months, you are seeing lots of keywords, long tail keywords emerging on page one or emerging on top page five. Usually if you do it right, you're going to see page five ranking regardless. I always see it page five, but if it's really competitive, you're not going to see any result in the first 3 months. That's mm-hmm. one hint. If it's really competitive, I'm going to go back to the drawing board and check what sites are ranking on page one and up to page two. If it's really not competitive, well, then I would check this. One is maybe, because there's still, I don't want to say this, but there's a lot of sites out there hiding their links. Mm-hmm. So it tells you, one, maybe this, after all, these sites are not really that weak. And number two, maybe I need more content. And I would tend to give up, or I would tend to get really, really worried if after 6 months I don't see any ranking, because it seldom happened to me. What happened to me is I saw rankings, but I didn't see the money. Mm. So what I mean by that is, because sometimes it might take you some time to rank on top three positions.
Yeah.
But because the money is in there, so you get bored, right? You get impatient. But usually what I've observed is it's so easy for me to rank on page two and bottom of page one. But then the battle is getting that top three position. But if I see that I'm ranking on page two and I snatch the bottom page one ranking, then I see, I know that it's a good hint.
Okay.
Because you're not doing outreach, not link building, you're not doing PR and outreach, and you've just put up this amount of content and you're already seeing rank. That is a good sign. That's a hint, by the way. And what else? If I see consistently if the weak sites are ranking, well, the usual suspect. If I see a YouTube video there, that's a weak site. That's a weak niche. If I see a Quora there, that's a weak site. If I see a forum, those are usual suspects. And if I see a niche site, of course, another niche site, I'll definitely go after that niche. Yes. If someone is ranking there, if someone like me is ranking on top three position, there's no way I can't rank, right? So that's a mantra. Yeah, right. Love unless, it. Yep. So that those are the hints. So.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. That's exactly what I wanted to know. So we're at the end of the episode, Tessa. This was wonderful.
Really?
Yeah, it went by fast. So wow. Knowing that the show is about content marketing, who would you recommend to be guests on future episodes?
So I have a really, really good friend of mine who is my coach, to be honest. She taught me everything I know about niche site. And to be honest, she's one of the honest people in this industry, right? One of the people that would not really like to be in the spotlight and would not really want to build blogs to teach how to make money online. I would not make money online teaching how to make money online. Right. So she is living the dream out of her big portfolio of niche sites. Her name is Shauna, and she blogs on, I finally convinced her to start her blog, but she started it, I think, I don't know how long was that? Or maybe 4 years ago right now. So she finally started her blog. So she blogs at skipblast.com. She's really, really awesome. And she has a lot of, you know, good tips to share when it comes to building niche site empire and building, you know, passive income online.
Amazing. Yeah, I'd love to talk with her. Thank you for the recommendation. And thank you so much, Tessa, for taking the time to come on the show and share all of your insights.
I'm so thrilled that we're doing this, but really, I would love to come back. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. If you've listened to this and want even more tips, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page on the Fractal website. And if you've learned anything from this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, tips on how I can restrain myself from eating ice cream constantly, or anything you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. I am a shameless extrovert who would love to hear from you. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing, and to Joao Pereira for logo design. And thank you, dear listener. I hope you'll join us next time.